Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd as we were in a six-minute lightning delay for safety. Sean Boyd, week two in the NFL is a good one.
Man, well, yeah, it is a definite good one, not only for Northern California, actually one half of Northern California. Of course, I'm talking about my beloved Oakland Raiders getting their first victory of the season, and it was a good one against the Jacksonville Jaguars. But of course, Sean Wally, your team up in the Pacific Northwest had to make sure that the other half of Northern California felt thunder and lightning.
Man, you know, the lightning was all around Seattle, and the Legion of Boom brought the thunder. In fact, the entire Seattle defense, and we'll get into that soon with our big-time guest, Davis Hsu from fieldgoals.com, coming on here shortly. But, man, it's been a great weekend of football all around once again. And, man, we're so excited that football is back.
Yeah, you know, I can't begin to tell you that there's that lull in the off season to where you can't wait for football season to start. And, you know, now that it's here, you know, you feel like a kid in a candy store. And, you know, if you look at a lot of the parity, and I've used this word before, parity. If you look at the parity in the NFL right now, a lot of the games yesterday were close, nail biting games, Sean Wally, down to the wire, down to the very last play.
Well, there's a reason they have four quarters and it's 60 minutes of football and every second counts. And, you know, up here in the Pacific Northwest, Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks, he has a mantra that you can't win the game until the fourth quarter. So whatever happens in the first, second quarter doesn't really matter. It's the fourth quarter where you win or lose that game. And definitely for like Buffalo, EJ Manuel getting his first victory on a last second touchdown. You've got Houston going to overtime to take on the Titans and beat them. Definitely, you got to play the entire game.
Yeah, and, you know, a couple other games that went down to the wire, it looked like New Orleans was not going to take care of business. And, of course, they marched down the field. And, you know, last-second field goal, they win the game 16-14. I believe you'd mentioned Chicago and Minnesota. Minnesota leading that game for the most part. And, you know, Chicago coming back with a nail biter, winning it 31-30. I mean, man, it was so exciting watching the games. And, of course, I can't leave out the San Diego Chargers getting their victory and beating the Philadelphia Eagles. The much touted Chip Kelly Philadelphia Eagles offense came to a screeching halt as the San Diego Chargers won 33-30.
Yeah, and that was kind of crazy because who would have thought that after the Monday night affair where the Chargers lost that big lead to the Houston Texans. And, yeah, it's just crazy how games go, and that's why they play the games. And let's talk about last night's Sunday night football affair in Seattle and go out to our big-time guest on the phone lines, Davis Hsu. Davis, thanks for joining us tonight, a writer for fieldgoals.com and big-time Seattle sports fan. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Hello, Davis.
This is Davis.
Hey, welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express, my friend. Still going over some of that excitement that you dealt with last night.
Yeah, it was an incredible game, and really, really impressed with Pete Carroll. He's been here for, you know, 3 years now, but just his ability to coach defense and put together a game plan against, you know, which is obviously one of the top teams in the NFL, still amazes me, even after a couple of years.
So, you know, walk us through this a little bit, because this game was set up much like, you know, a title fight. And, you know, I believe that, you know, the NFL could have made a lot of money on pay-per-view if they would have put it on pay-per-view, because it was set up as such. You have the Guinness Book of World Records that was broken last night by the 12th man, I believe. Sean Wally corrected me earlier today. I believe it was at 136 decibels. How loud was that being in that atmosphere?
You know, I had a lot of coworkers that went to the game, and it was just bananas. It doesn't really shock me. I remember last year when the Niners came, it was second to last week of the season, and I know that environment. It was rainy as well, and it was just Sunday night football, and it was just bananas. But the whole city was just waiting. Sports radio would hype it up. You know, everyone that lived in Seattle, you know, knew about the game, was waiting for the game. And it was just a really, really big deal, and it's been something that, you know, the city's been looking forward for months, really.
Davis, talk to us about your anticipation, not only for the Seattle season, but how the Seahawks, you know, they won in week one, had a few issues. Everything is not hitting on all cylinders, which, in my opinion, you don't want to have happen until December and January. Let's have a few kinks right now, and they're still finding ways to win, which in the past, Seahawks teams would not do.
Yeah, they really have. You watch the game, and even the game against Carolina, Seahawks have a lot to clean up. O-line and pass protection still giving up a lot of pressure. They lost Russell Okung in that game, and he could be out, you know, who knows, 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, that's not an official number. That's just kind of, you know, just trying to do research on his toe injury. And, you know, they have no Percy Harvin, no Brandon Browner, and their two best pass rushers also did not play, Chris Clemens and Bruce Irvin. And they have a young rookie defensive tackle, interior pass rusher Jordan Hill, who also didn't play. So there's some adversity, and with this Okung injury, there's going to be some more adversity. That being said, you know, for me, it's really not about which team has the most stacked roster. A lot of people during the offseason were saying, hey, you know, the roster is so good, and they're going to win the Super Bowl. But for me, it's how does a team deal with adversity? And so, and I don't even know if that's really hit yet. I think there's going to be more. That's just kind of how things go. So far, so good. I think they're handling it well, and that will define whether how far Seattle can really go.
Isn't it amazing what we're seeing out of Pete Carroll and John Schneider, a coach and GM running this team that are steering the ship in the right direction, that are two peas in a pod, that, you know, the right foot walks in step with the left foot, and this entire organization, top to bottom, knows where they're going. Versus when Mike Holmgren was here, yes, the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl after the 05 season, but Holmgren and Ruskell were never on the same page. They very rarely agreed on what direction to go in and which players to bring in free agent-wise or draft. And now here the two-headed monster is aligned, and you see the beauty of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is part of that is what I call organizational memory, like the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know, you know, they're having some struggles recently, but, you know, they've been around for decades and decades and decades. And I almost feel like some of the lessons from the past, it's kind of like an old wise 67-year-old person versus a, you know, you see a young kind of hotshot kid in his 20s, you know, thinking he knows everything. And you know, I'm in my 30s, not that I'm that old, but you kind of listen to them. You're kind of thinking to yourself, you know, that, you know, they still have a lot to learn. I feel like the Seahawks is a young organization compared to a lot of the NFL, you know, 36, 37 years old, and trying to figure out how to put that together. You know, Paul Allen hasn't been an owner for, you know, 20 years or anything like that. So, you know, he obviously knows how to go get the big name coach, and now he's just trying to find that formula in terms of how to marry that with the GM, seeing the dysfunction that's happened previously. And I think he's obviously they've found a lot of success in this current setup. Now, I will say this, you know, if they did not nail Russell Wilson, and, you know, they could have easily lost him. Maybe they would have drafted him in the fourth round. He would have been gone, or maybe someone else would have taken him. And I think Schneider was more willing to get him in the second round, and Carroll seemed to want to wait a little longer. If that would have happened, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they missed him, you know, how could their chemistry with each other, you know, what would have happened with a big blow like that. But it didn't happen, and yes, obviously the setup right now is working out really, really well.
Davis Asu with us on the double with the Double S Express. And yeah, Davis, you're exactly right. I mean, Russell Wilson, he is the quintessential quarterback in the NFL right now. I mean, you're looking at a quarterback that is very headstrong, very savvy. He can stand in the pocket. He delivers an accurate football. And of course, his legs are tremendous as far as, you know, when there's pressure that comes around. And you had mentioned the offensive line, you know, some of the ailments of the offensive line. It looks like, I believe Paul McQuiston came in the offseason. You know, it almost looked like yesterday he was having a little bit of trouble in the beginning, but then started to turn it around as the game moved on. What was your assessment of the offensive line?
You know, Paul McQuiston's actually been here for 2 or 3 years. He actually played a lot for Russell Okung back in 2011. Russell was pushing on Trent Cole, and Trent Cole grabbed him and flipped him over and tore his pectoral muscle. And at that point, you know, a lot of people thought that the O-line was going to fall apart, but Paul McQuiston stepped in, and the Seahawks were able to finish off the season and get good production out of the O-line in terms of, you know, pass blocking and run blocking. So he's not the ideal, and they have a young undrafted tackle named Alvin Bailey, who's a converted guard who they like at left tackle. So I think we could see him play some. Paul McQuiston could also play left tackle. He'll also get more practice snaps. And then, you know, he was the left guard with James Carpenter coming back from injury. So, you know, the best two players on the O-line is Max Unger, the center, and left tackle Russell Okung. The other three players are kind of a work in progress. Breno Giacomini is kind of a tough guy, right tackle, better in the run game, and can kind of hold up, but he's not the type of player, like a Pro Bowl caliber player, but someone that Tom Cable likes. That being said, this could be his last year. He's a free agent next year, and I can see them going into the draft, getting another tackle. J.R. Sweezy, converted defensive tackle, who they have playing right guard, and who they really like, but he still kind of shows that, you know, he's only been playing O-line for about a year and a half, and so he shows some of those young mistakes. And then James Carpenter, their left guard, is a real powerful player who held up well against Justin Smith, but probably struggles with some more of the athletic players, the quicker players. So if he can get his hands on you, it's over. But if you're trying to have him aim in space, you know, he's kind of a little bit bigger, 350 pounds. So it's a work in progress. They're not just littered with 4 or 5 first, second round picks. There's a lot to improve in terms of the penalties, you know, in pass pro, and the run blocking can improve. So I think it's going to get better. I have a lot of faith in Tom Cable and Pete Carroll, but there's still a lot more to be had there on the O-line.
Yeah, you had mentioned Tom Cable, of course, you know, coming over from being a head coach with the Oakland Raiders. How great of leadership is Tom Cable giving? Because you're mentioning, you know, a lot of mistakes. I believe there were 22 penalties last night. There were 12 called against the 49ers and 10 against Seattle, or maybe it's vice versa. But how important is the leadership of an offensive line coach such as Tom Cable for this young offensive line?
I think Tom Cable is actually the most important coach besides Pete Carroll. A lot of Seahawks fans would probably agree, because there's such a commitment to running the ball, and there's such a commitment to being physical and to being tough, and the whole passing game is based off the run in terms of play action, and even the having a mobile quarterback also benefits the run game. So it all kind of really ties together. But I think his attitude and when Carroll first took the job, his biggest coaching hire was to get Alex Gibbs. And he didn't make it through until the regular season. They had him during the offseason, and then he quit like the day before the first game. And he never got in pace with the offensive coordinator. So it's a really, really important position. I don't worry as much on the defensive side of the ball. Seahawks lost Gus Bradley, and they brought in Dan Quinn. But Pete Carroll, you know, is a defensive, you know, he's a defensive mastermind. So I'd never worry too much about that. On the offensive side, they do have Darrell Bevell, but I do think Tom Cable is a huge part of the game plan, the running game, and just a big part of their offensive identity. So Tom Cable is a big part of what the Seahawks are doing. And a lot of times he does it, you know, without necessarily having first and second round talent. at every position.
That's the voice of Davis Hsu, contributor at fieldgoals.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Davis Hsu Seattle. And Davis, one of the things I think that is most impressive with this Seahawk team after 2 weeks is that, like I mentioned earlier, they're not firing on all cylinders, yet they're still coming away with victories, and especially last night, a decidedly one-sided, easy victory, at least on the scoreboard. And, you know, just imagine what it's going to be like when the offense does churn on all cylinders. The sky's the limit for this team.
Yeah, there's a lot more on offense for them to do. I mean, if they cut down the penalties, just even the penalties in the red zone, if they chop down the penalties from, you know, 9 to 11 per game down to 5 or 6 per game, you know, you got to figure that's worth 4 to 7 points a game per minimum. And they got to clean up some of their red zone play, pass protection. And Russell Wilson, he just hasn't been I think Seahawks fans know that he can even play better than he's played in the first two games. And they played tough defenses. But people have seen enough of him to know that he's not 100% yet for whatever reason. Call it the defense is adjusting to him or you know, playing on the limitations that he may or may not have. But, yeah, there's a lot to be gained, and Percy Harvin coming back, hopefully sometime toward the middle or end of the season, should add, you know, another dimension. But if they just cleaned up the penalties and some of the mistakes, putting themselves in third and long, second and long, you know, that could even be a bigger impact than getting back a Percy Harvin or something like that. Just staying on schedule on offense.
For the upcoming schedule, let's say the first half of the schedule for the Seattle Seahawks, what games are you circling that you think might challenge this team, or what game do you think, you know, the Seahawks have to win?
You know, it's interesting. I don't usually get too worked up about the AFC games because they don't, obviously they count for wins, but they don't help you in terms of your tie break. You know, versus some other NFC teams. That being said, I think it's interesting that the two games coming up after Jacksonville, in terms of Houston and Indy in back-to-back weeks, both of them are 10 a.m. starts, and the Seahawks typically start slow on the road, and both teams are good. And the 49ers have both those games. They play them in the next four games. They play Houston and Indy as well, but they get both of them at home. So, you know, I think, you know, those games just in the near future, you know, those two games are going to be a big deal. I think, you know, second half of the season, obviously going to San Francisco is going to be a big deal. And I think going to Atlanta, that's going to be a big deal as well. And there's other big games. But, yeah, coming up, going to 10 a.m. starts in Houston and Indy is going to be a challenge.
Davis Hsu with us on the double with the Double S Express. Hey, Davis, did you get a chance to get in the locker room after the game last night? And if so, what was that atmosphere like?
Oh, no, I didn't get a chance to go to the locker room. I'm just a fan. But, you know, just from hearing, I do follow a lot of, you know, the reporters and post-game interviews, various media. And, yeah, it was a big deal, you know, seeing Richard Sherman. And just seeing Pete Carroll, it was obviously a big game. They tried to downplay it, but it was a big, big win. And this is something that the Seahawks have wanted, you know, for a while. And so they obviously beat them second half of last year, but I think they wanted to kind of verify that win. So I think it was a big deal for the locker room and for the coaches. And so, you know, it means more than just another win. You know, I know they all count the same, but this was a big deal. It was a statement. So I think they're pretty excited. And now they just got to refocus and play Jacksonville. And you can't just, you know, Jacksonville's looking right now like the worst team in the NFL. That being said, there's a lot for the Seahawks to work on. So I'm hoping that they just focus and move on and start focusing for this week because there's a lot of areas for them to still improve on.
Yeah, Jacksonville, you know, the Seahawks getting ready to take on Jacksonville. I don't think that the Seahawks are going to have that letdown week. I think that things are going to continue with the and the momentum that has picked up from last night's game will carry on into next week's game. But shifting gears a little bit, field goals. Tell us a little bit about fieldgoals.com. So you're a writer for fieldgoals.com. How did that come about?
You know, I'm just a fan on Twitter, and the Danny Kelly, who's the managing editor for fieldgoals.com, you know, he had just asked me in various ways. I forgot how. Hey, could you, you know, I'd love for you to write for us, and I really didn't want to make that commitment to him because I felt, you know, to be a blogger, you have to be consistent. And, you know, I don't do this professionally or anything. I have a job in real estate, and I'm a dad, and my wife works, and I got two kids, and all just the different life things. But, you know, I don't know if it was half a year, and Danny's just a really great guy, and I just, hey, I'll write for you one blog a week. That's kind of what I told him. This is a promise. And just started doing that, and I don't know if I really write once a week. Maybe sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less. But just been writing there, and I really collaborate with Danny on a lot of things. There's a lot of seed ideas that I never develop. I kind of drop to him, and he just takes it and runs with it. And he just does a fantastic job in consistently putting out content, recruiting other writers to help contribute, and a real humble guy, and just done a really, really good job. And, you know, I don't know all the website numbers, but I know his traffic numbers, you know, are really, really impressive. And, you know, obviously with the Seahawks, you know, being a good team, that helps as well. So, but Danny Kelly, the managing editor, does a great job, and he's just someone I interact with, you know, every day, texting him and talking about various ideas and players and that type of thing. So it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And Davis, definitely let Danny know that I've emailed him and talk to him about coming on the show. So relay that message for me, as he hasn't got back to me yet. But yeah, he does great things at fieldgoals.com, where you contribute for him. And you're at Davis Hsu Seattle on Twitter. Thanks so much for your time. A great member of the 12th man in Seattle. And looking forward to big things from the Seattle Seahawks. And we'll look forward to your next blog entry article at fieldgoals.com. Thanks so much for your time tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Davis.
There goes Davis Hsu on Twitter at Davis Hsu Seattle, fieldgoals.com contributor. Big things happening in Seattle with the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, man, what an awesome game last night, especially for those fans of the Pacific Northwest and around the country. Of course, you know, the Seahawks are picking up a strong fan base. And, you know, isn't that amazing? The more you start to win and the more you get the exposure, especially playing on Monday night, Sean Wally, and Sunday night as well, I'm sorry, that, you know, you start to pick up, you know, a huge fan base. And, you know, Seattle is starting to, you know, make that mark. And if you play against the Seattle Seahawks and you go up there to CenturyLink Field, especially if you're thinking about winning not only just a regular season game, but a playoff game, and I believe, and let's talk that, because the Seahawks are definitely going to be in the playoffs, I believe, you better have your A game right. And if you don't, you're going to be made an example of, just like the San Francisco 49ers last night, man. These guys, the Seattle Seahawks, are clicking on all cylinders, man.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd. I am Sean Wally. Together we are the Double S Express. This is On the Double with the Double S Express. And coming back right after this, we'll get into a little bit more in detail on the game last night, Sunday night, football night in America, and talk more sports with you. Call into the show, 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471. Be right back on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally. Alongside myself, Sean Boyd down in Sacramento. As we look forward here to taking your calls at 888-429-5471. Call in and talk NFL or college football as football is rolling big time. And before the break, big time guest Davis Asu was talking about the Seattle Seahawks and how things are going well after 2 weeks. And Mr. Boyd, you mentioned that Seattle is firing on all cylinders. And I would argue that the scoreboard showed that last night with a 29-3 Seattle victory, but the offense is far from clicking on all cylinders, and that is really what is scary, because if they're already finding ways to win on the East Coast, on the road, taking out Cam Newton, taking out Colin Kaepernick, and things aren't great on offense yet, what's going to happen when they are?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a lot of improvement to be made, with the offense. Of course, Davis was mentioning that. But, you know, if there's a grave improvement to be made with the Seattle offense and they're winning games 29-3 and 12-7, I mean, that bodes well for the Seattle Seahawks. The biggest caveat for Seattle is, of course, this going back into last year, is that they have a tough time on the road. And it showed, you know, in week one, barely escaping the Carolina Panthers. And so if the Seattle Seahawks can fix that, you know, as far as, you know, the way they play at home in contrast to how they play on the road, because let's face it, last year their away record was not anything to write home about. But if they can fix that, they're definitely one of the teams, you know, if not the best team right now to date in the NFL and, moving forward. So, you know, some great things on the horizon for the Seattle Seahawks.
Let's talk a little bit about last night, Sunday Night Football. Let's talk about, first of all, the 12th man and the world record that was set. Guinness Book of World Records was on hand that was set up by a fan organization called Volume 12, and they reached out to former Seahawk Joe Tafoya, Kerry Carter, Chike Okeefor, and Omari Lowe, that are now running Jump It Media in the Pacific Northwest, who helped bring in Guinness and get this whole thing started. And they've been all over throughout various TV and radio shows all over the Pacific Northwest and the country. And, you know, the Guinness Book of World Records was there for three readings at random times. Jump It Media didn't want it set that it was going to be X, Y, and Z time. It was just randomly, we're not going to pump it up. We're not going to tell people when to cheer. We're just going to take a reading. And that's what happened. And after it's all said and done, the 12th man in Seattle set the world record at over 136 decibels, which is louder than a fighter jet taking off.
Yeah, you know, Seattle, hats off to the 12th man in Seattle. A lot of the times when you go around leagues, you know, people and organizations have names just to have names, but the 12th man really means something in Seattle. It means actually, you know, fan involvement. And it does mean that there's an added person that's involved in that game. And if you're a visiting team or a visiting opponent that coming in and playing in Seattle, and you think that for whatever reason the crowd doesn't play a huge role, you have teams that are preparing for the week by playing, you know, having loud music and tremendous noise as they're trying to call out plays to prepare themselves to go up against the Seattle Seahawks and the 12th man. And there is nothing like it, Sean Wally, as far as when you get into that atmosphere. And of course, you've been there, and I've been there at CenturyLink Field. And to hear the noise that comes from those fans, you can't help but fear. If you're the opposing team, fear what's about to happen. And that noise level takes place the whole game. And the only time that the noise level dissipates is when there's a commercial, because that crowd, it definitely believes that they're in the game, Sean Wally.
Well, you've been there at CenturyLink Field working for Fox Television, Fox Sports, for the biggest game at CenturyLink Field, the 2005 NFC Championship game. And I don't believe any decibels were taken then, but talk to us about what you remember about that game against the Carolina Panthers that sent the Seahawks into the Super Bowl.
Man, you know, just the atmosphere. I mean, there were 2 weeks that I'd worked up there, and one of them was the Indianapolis Colts game for CBS. And then, of course, the NFC Championship game, the Washington Redskins came into town, and both occasions that I got the chance to work, that crowd noise was tremendous. And when you factor in that noise along with the elements, you know, with the weather not actually being up to par from time to time, that is an added bonus. And to see the fans that are excited, and this is something that I'm hoping and I'm believing for, you know, my team. Of course, you know, the Oakland Raiders, the Raider Nation, their fan base is tremendous, and it's right up there as far as, you know, decibel levels, you know, in the heyday. But something tells me, and I truly believe this, that once that Kingdome was demolished and at the time Seahawks Stadium was built, it added an added pressure to visiting teams coming in, and Seattle really takes hold of, you know, that stadium. You know, you have the Hawk's Nest in the end zone, and then you have the way the stadium is shaped, and the crowd really loves having the great venue that is now CenturyLink Field. And you know, the Seattle fans take advantage of it, and I love it. I love the fact that the fans can actually, you know, play a big part in getting the W.
You know, I'm wondering, as you mentioned the Hawk's Nest, I got to take part in that Hawk's Nest for the first time and be in the stands, in the Hawk's Nest, in the north end zone last night. And I'm wondering if you ordered Mother Nature to supply the lightning and thunder show that had the hour delay so you could get that drive on from Oakland as you were working at O.co for the Oakland victory over Jacksonville. You wanted more time to be able to make that drive and see the game on TV.
I did want to get home actually to watch the game, but you want to know what's even more ironic in that whole situation is that the game was suspended. And when the game was suspended, I believe it was 0-0 at the time when the game was suspended. And you would have thought that, hey, momentum would have swung to the 49ers. In last year's Super Bowl, when the lights went out in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, and Baltimore was crushing the 49ers. And when the lights went out and they came back on, momentum shifted to the 49ers. Now, it's funny that today the 49ers were talking about the Super Bowl last year, and they're like, oh, no, we came back and this, that, and the other, and the lights had nothing to do with nothing. But now that they lost this game handily and got it handed to them by the Seattle Seahawks, oh, my goodness. Oh, well, you know, the thunderstorms happened, and that took part. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of excuses that are coming about. But, man, I'm glad that, you know, that storm happened, because I wanted to get home, Sean, and see a little bit or most of the game. And, you know, it was exciting from beginning to end. You know, it was a hard-fought battle. San Francisco stuck with it. They played tough the first half, and it looked like, you know, it was just going to be one of those games that was, you know, going to be close to the end. And then Seattle happened, man. And, you know, what a great game that Seattle put together in the second half.
You know, we've got a lot more sports to get to. And one more thing I will mention, and I will leave Seattle alone after this, is that I was, as I mentioned earlier, I was at the game with actually our very first caller here on the Double with the Double S Express, a good buddy of mine, Corey, out of Duval, Washington. And unbeknownst to us, we didn't even realize it, Corey's wearing his Earl Thomas jersey. Do you have any idea what number Earl Thomas wears, Sean Boyd?
Man, I have no clue. What
it's
number?
It's one number less than 30.
Okay. So
which
he
would be
29.
Okay. And I was wearing a Russell Wilson jersey, and his number is
3.
The final score was?
That's incredible. So but you could be
29-3.
That the you're the reason that this. Okay, I've heard it all. It's not.
Hey,
it's
well, like
not good
I
that
said.
Your. It's not good enough that your team beats the mess out of the San Francisco 49ers. Now you're telling me that you and Corey are responsible for the 29-3 score.
No, I told you it was unbeknownst to us. We were walking after the game back at our vehicles in Bellevue trying to find a place to have a beverage and something to eat because we hadn't eaten in 7 hours and the long hour delay. And some people were walking, you know, the opposite direction in front of us, and they said, "Hey, 29-3. That was that 29-3, that was the score of the game." And it hit us right then and there. We're like, "Oh my goodness, yes it was. 29-3. I'm not saying we're the reason. I'm just saying we were 29-3 and it happened."
Oh man, that is incredible. So I guess, you know, Tony McDaniel on the Seahawks, he's a defensive tackle. Number 99. If there's a jersey out there for Tony McDaniel, maybe you need to purchase that for the Seahawks for the rest of the year and go around with somebody that has, you know, Russell Wilson's jersey also. So 99-3 is what we should expect, you know, in the Super Bowl.
Well, if the only Seahawks problem get is I can't wear the 99 because I was wearing the 3 and that happened for the opposing team.
Oh, okay. So you're
Niners.
Okay. That's right. Okay. So you're going to wear Russell Wilson for the rest of the year.
Sounds great to me.
All right. And whoever you take to the game, you know, Tony McDaniel's jerseys, wherever they may be, you're a hot commodity right now for the Seahawk fans. So, yeah, look out. Tony McDaniel jerseys will be flying off the shelves. And you heard it here first on the Double with the Double S Express.
And speaking of the fans and the 12th man and additionally, the San Francisco 49er fans, you know, I had an experience yesterday that I had never seen, I had never been a part of, and that was true tailgating yesterday. And I got to give a shout out. They're starting a Twitter page at the 12th Rig, RIG. A great tailgating experience. If you know Seattle, where the stadiums are, 4th Avenue, right there at the corner of 4th and Royal Brome, just an incredible atmosphere to tailgate, to get to games early. You can be a fan of the Seahawks. You can be a fan of the Raiders, the 49ers. Show up in your football gear. Bring something to eat, something to drink. People have motorhomes out there. They're grilling. They've got their satellite dishes, their antennas to watch the 10 a.m. games, the 1 p.m. games. And everybody's having fun playing, you know, ring toss and beanbag toss. And it was just in a crazy atmosphere. And 49er fans were getting along with Seahawks fans, and hey, everybody got along, and then it was game time, and once the whistle blew, all bets were off.
Man, so there were quite a few San Francisco 49er fans up there, I take it.
There were a handful. We spoke to a group that flew up from the Bay, and they had 10 that were there, and, you know, they were mingling and eating and having a beverage and having a good time, and everybody got along. You know, of course, we gave them a boo as they walked by, and it was all in good fun, and that's just a great time. Everybody had a grill and different things to eat, and great experience.
Yeah, you know, having a chance to be up there and seeing, you know, the nostalgia in the parking lot. Seattle fans definitely know how to put together tailgates and, you know, of course, having that great venue that is CenturyLink Field. I mean, you put everything together. It makes for a fun afternoon, a fun evening, just, you know, a fun time all around.
So you yourself were down in Oakland working for CBS Sports. The Jacksonville Jaguars looked to invade the O.co, but that did not happen as the Oakland Raiders and Raider Nation got their first victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, and man, it was exciting and a fun time down at the O.co. And of course, you know, getting there early in the morning and seeing the Raider Nation, the fans, the cars that were parked all or that were sitting on the freeway because they were waiting to get into the stadium. You know, it was a great feeling, and with the understanding that NFL football 2013 is back at O.co. And what an exciting time to get a chance to be there with the Raider Nation and you know, talking with fans and shaking hands and, you know, getting a chance to, you know, feel that excitement of, you know, the first home game. And, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars coming in, they're looking to, you know, get their first win. Had a tough time last week against the Kansas City Chiefs, losing 28-2. And Gus Bradley, of course, you know Gus, you know, former Seahawk coach. And, you know, he's looking for his first win. You know, the Jacksonville Jaguars have a lot of work to do, Sean Wally, and it was great, you know, for Oakland fans to actually see if the week prior, of course, you know, Oakland losing to the Indianapolis Colts, you know, in a last second play, a nail biter to the end, to see if Oakland could come out and put together, you know, enough to win, and they did. I mean, Oakland came out and took care of business, Sean, and the Raider Nation, you know, definitely showed up as well.
What does Terrell Pryor have to do in Oakland for you to say and have your aha moment that he is the future and we do not need to look at or worry about the quarterback position? Or conversely, has that already happened?
Yeah, it's real simple, Sean. It's just get better, you know. And, you know, Terrell Pryor, he's the type of person, he's a bookworm. And he loves to study and he likes to take a look at his mistakes. And he understands that he can't get better if he doesn't study from, you know, some of the great quarterbacks. And whether that's quarterbacks of a distant past from the past 10 to 15 years or even current quarterbacks, Terrell Pryor has been known to say that he has studied from the likes of a Russell Wilson or a Colin Kaepernick or, you know, some of the veteran quarterbacks that are playing in the NFL. And so, you know, I believe that as long as he continues to command a presence in the Oakland Raiders huddle, he will be the quarterback of the future. He's, let's face it, his athletic ability is that of, you know, the young quarterbacks of today. He can scramble and move out of the pocket. What he has to get better at is he has to get better with the accuracy part. And, you know, from that, his team's going to have to meet him halfway. The receivers are going to have to get better as well. And so, what I mean by that is just catch the ball and look the ball in. You know, there are some times where he puts the ball right on the money and these guys are dropping the ball. So I believe, though, that Terrell will be the quarterback of the future as long as he continues to show a strong progression on getting better and being in a starting quarterback role.
Yeah, and it's good that there is progress and that the Raiders are 1-1. And really, they were a play away from being 2-0 with that loss in week one to the Colts. And that's what all fans want to see, is show us that you're going in the right direction and progress is being made.
And one of the things that Charles Woodson has been saying is one of the things that you will see from this team is that we are going to compete and we're going to give you 100% from beginning to end. And that's all that the fans can ask for, because I can tell you, Raider Nation, we have seen some teams over the past few years that have given less than their best. And for me personally, getting a chance to see these guys after the games in the locker rooms and walking to their cars and whatnot, I don't see that they actually hurt from some of these games lost last year. And that was sad. That's sad to say. I mean, because if you're a fan and you see your team walking out like, you know, it was no big deal and it hurts you, then there's a problem there. And so this year, I believe that the team has definitely made strides in getting rid of those cancers on the team, which is the reason why they got rid of a lot of the, you know, the big salaries. And so Reggie McKenzie and Mark Davis and Dennis Allen, they're turning things around. And it looks good so far, Sean.
Looking at good things to come in Oakland as they are 500, moving on to Monday Night Football next week, taking on Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. Sean Boyd, why don't you tell everybody what's coming up after the break and that we're looking for their phone calls.
Yeah, for those of you who are calling into the show, you can call in at 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. If you want to talk about last night's games, the 49ers, of course, losing to the Seattle Seahawks, or Raider Nation, if you want to talk about that, you can. If you want to talk about college, baseball, basketball, the whole nine, give us a call, 888-429-5471. So as we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit more on the NFL and take your calls. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And for those that are curious, Monday Night Football, it is 17-10 Cincinnati over the Pittsburgh Steelers as we speak.
Man, what is going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers? Mike Tomlin, just a great, great guy. And you know, I don't know what the situation is. I know the Ben Roethlisberger in the offseason, you know, after, you know, surgery, and, you know, this was supposed to be a time for him to be at 100%. And, you know, I don't know if it's Ben or if it's, you know, a lack of, you know, a supporting cast, but it's going to be some tough times for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Sean.
Going to be. I think they're already there. They're about to be 0-2, barring a good comeback here against the Bengals in Cincinnati. But the Bengals, many have selected to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl, and the Steelers have so many holes on the offensive line, at running back. You know, you let your best wide receiver walk in free agency. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. Obviously, you've got a salary cap, and you have to, you know, abide by whatever you set forth as your parameters. But now it's a lot easier for teams to scheme on defense to thwart what you're trying to do offensively.
Yeah, and of course, you forgot to mention one of their best linebackers now playing with the Cincinnati Bengals, and that's James Harrison. And I can only imagine that, and not having a chance to see the game, what type of a terror he's probably putting on the, you know, against the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. And man, they probably wish that they signed him. The Pittsburgh Steelers, that is.
Well, we'll see how that game unfolds and whether or not the Steelers can come back and tie the game and maybe win it, as it is 17-10, Bengals in the lead. And a lot of great games over the weekend, and one that big follower of the Double S here on the Double wants to know about is what happened with Arizona State and Wisconsin. Some officials were in trouble today, what they did or did not do at the end of that game.
Man, you talk about missing in action. I still don't know what happened, because, you know, I know that Stave, you know, the quarterback for Wisconsin, he was taking the snap and then tripped and fell, and all kinds of melee happened. But I mean, for the officials to get this wrong, so wrong that the Pac-12 had to step in and say that, you know, they were wrong in the decision, is just beyond me, Sean Wally.
Well, yeah, it turned out that, you know, Wisconsin was setting it up for the final chance at a field goal at the end of the game, and it appeared that the quarterback did take a knee, but the officials didn't act like that's what happened, and they had no sense of urgency to get the ball placed and get this field goal off, and time ran off the clock, so Arizona State wins the game.
Yeah, well, worse than that is the officials allowed Arizona State to treat this like a live ball and jump all over Stave as if the ball was live, as if there was a fumble. I mean, so you can imagine there's three or four Arizona State Sun Devils that just pile onto the quarterback, and, you know, the quarterback could have got injured in all of this. The officials are standing around. They're not willing to make a call, and, you know, Wisconsin loses the game.
And Wisconsin was ranked number 18 at the time. And now they're going to fall in the polls as they lose by 32-30. And they were trying to line up for the potential game-winning field goal, and they don't even get to try it. 18 seconds left at the 13-yard line. That's a gimme field goal. Are you kidding me? And now the officials have been reprimanded and sanctioned. And it's amazing that Jack Foliard, who was the referee, he's been a Pac-10/Pac-12 official for more than 30 years, and this happens.
Yeah. Man, I wonder what's going to happen with these officials. I know that they are definitely not going to step foot into the Midwest, especially not into Wisconsin, anytime soon. It was just a total mishap by officials, and I wonder what the reprimand is going to be outside of these little sanctions. I mean, that was just bad. You know, I know that in Madison, they are up in arms right now that their team went down to defeat like this. You just, you know, you don't want to lose, period, but not this way. I mean, they were knocking at the goal line and, of course, setting themselves up for this game-winning field goal. And, you know, to have a blunder like this is just, it's too much. It's too much, man.
Well, on a bright side, at least in the Pac-12, an up-and-coming team, the University of Washington Huskies, led by Steve Sarkisian, traveled to Chicago to take on Illinois at Soldier Field, and they come away with a victory, 34-24.
Yeah, you can't say enough with what Steve Sarkisian is doing with the Washington Huskies. And, of course, preseason-wise, they weren't even in the top 25. And after they beat Boise State in week one, up in the Montlake at the University of Washington, the nation has taken notice on what's going on at the University of Washington, and now going to face the Illini in Big Ten country. I mean, the Huskies look phenomenal. Their speed is just dynamic. They're dynamic at the quarterback position, at the receiver's position. Of course, they have their tight end coming back from injury and suspension, and, you know, they are looking great, Sean.
Yeah, and they've definitely climbed the polls from being unranked at week one. And now after week two, they've gone from 19 after beating Boise State to now 17 after beating Illinois.
Yeah, so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, they're going to get into Pac-12 play. And the Pac-12 has strengthened itself quite a bit this year. I'm looking forward to, what the Huskies can do against the University of Oregon. Now, of course, it'd be a little far-fetched to say that they could actually go up there and beat the Ducks, especially the way the Ducks look. But you want to measure yourself against the best, and right now at the number two team in the country in the Oregon Ducks, I think it'd be exciting to see the Huskies play Oregon.
Well, not only that, but you've got another team in the Pac-12 over here on the east side of the state in Pullman. Mike Leach has the Washington State Cougars playing well, and they, not a big deal to beat Southern Utah that they just upended in Pullman, but, a week ago, they took out USC. So things are looking up also on the Palouse.
Yeah, I think the schedule definitely favors the Washington State Cougars right now. Of course, they played the Auburn Tigers in week one and played them tough down on the Plains. And, of course, the Auburn Tigers winning. But the next two games, you're talking about USC. And, Lane Kiffin and the USC Trojans, there's a huge question mark on what's going on there. So it's going to be interesting to see, as the Cougars, play more Pac-12 teams, how good they actually are. I believe that they're a solid team, and you can't take Southern Utah lightly, which, the Cougars didn't, because this is a Big Sky team. Then Big Sky over the past couple of years have played Pac-12 teams, really good. You're looking at Eastern Washington, beating Oregon State, and of course Sac State doing it the year before. And, Southern Utah being in the Big Sky, you can't go in as a Pac-12 team thinking that things were going to be easy, and the Cougars took care of business.
You mentioned Lane Kiffin. Does he do anything other than ruin programs? You look at what happened in Oakland with the Raiders. He goes to Tennessee for 1.3 days and bolts on them, and now he's at USC running them, roughly into the ground.
Yeah, so, I think his days are numbered in Los Angeles. And so if things don't turn around drastically, you're looking at an interim coach coming in. And, it's tough because Lane Kiffin, the X's and O's, Lane Kiffin is actually a very sound and savvy person. It's just all of the other stuff that follows Lane Kiffin that really bogs him down. And he puts himself into this shell or this bubble that he's untouchable. And when you do that, and you're not winning, you become an easy target to lose a job. And so, he did it really real quick in Oakland, and same thing in Tennessee. And now it looks like he's following suit in Los Angeles and in USC as well.
College football moving on, and good things are happening all around. And the same in the NFL as we move forward to week three. Right now, as we move to the fourth quarter here on Monday Night Football, it is still 17-10 in Cincinnati, the Bengals over the Steelers. And my guess is that will remain the same, and Cincinnati will win that game as they are the better team. And we have troubled times in Pittsburgh, as we already mentioned.
Yes, the troubled times in Pittsburgh. Another place to where there are troubled times, John, is in Washington, D.C. So, there were big hopes for the Washington Redskins at the beginning of the season. Of course, RG3 putting the whole team on his back. And let's face it, the schedule wasn't really favorable for the Redskins, opening the season. But, of course, losing to the Philadelphia Eagles and not understanding that Chip Kelly offense wasn't good. And then yesterday playing the Green Bay Packers after the Packers losing to the 49ers last week. I mean, what is happening in D.C.?
Yeah, it's definitely not how Shanahan wanted to begin the year, nor anybody involved with the Washington Redskins. And you have to wonder, is RG3 a little tentative, or are there just too many holes on that team in general?
Well, if there are any holes to be filled, it has to be on the defensive side. You have an older defense, in the Washington Redskins, and these guys are starting to get dinged up, slow down a little bit, and it's showing. And so they might have to have a little bit of a youth movement to get things right. I mean, on the offensive side of the ball, it seems like things were looking up. And I mean, you wouldn't have been able to tell yesterday from yesterday's game. But I say that their woes are on the defensive side.
A quick update out of Seattle, mentioned earlier with our big-time guest Davis Hsu, that Russell Okung definitely did have a toe injury, and he is Seattle's starting left tackle, and he in fact has turf toe, which is spraining the ligaments of his big toe. The bad news is he will be out this week against the Jaguars. The good news is he will be out against the Jaguars.
Yeah, so, you know, with Seattle, it's just going to be, you know, business as usual. Russell being out, next man up, you know, as they say in the NFL. And so, you know, you've got Alvin Bailey that might fall into that left tackle spot. And so, you know, I think they'll be okay. You know, they have a strong offensive line, as we mentioned earlier, Paul McQuiston and Max Unger anchoring at the center. And, you know, of course, the right side is strong. J.R. Sweeney and Bruno Giacomini. Did I hatch that up?
Giacomini.
Giacomini. And so, you know, I think that
just call him Breno. Everybody knows Breno.
There we go. And so I think Seattle will be okay, and I don't think that the Jaguars are that big of a problem for them.
Real quick, Sean Boyd, put on your former football coach hat and talk to us about what's going on in Tampa Bay, where it appears the strict style of head coach Greg Schiano is not sitting well with veteran players as things are turning sour quickly in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when you say strict, I mean, there has to be some type of order and discipline put into a program in an organization. The thing is when you do that, especially at the professional level, you know, these guys have to buy in. And if they don't buy in and they don't believe in what you're saying, it can go sour real quick. And Tampa Bay is another one of those teams who is supposed to have a huge start to the season. And now when you have these rumblings coming about, you know, there is no positive side to that unless you as the coach, if I were the coach and those rumblings were going on, just like I ask my players to, you know, to make that adjustment and we make the adjustment at halftime, as a coach, you have to make an adjustment on how it is that you're going to run your team. And sometimes it's not easy. It's not easy to swallow your pride. But when you're talking about, you know, being a leader of men and going out and taking care of business and putting W's in the column, you know, sometimes it takes that.
Quick updates from the NFL. Houston Texan fans and fantasy football players will be interested to know that Andre Johnson did suffer a concussion yesterday. Mm. And as we talked about the Seattle-Jacksonville matchup this coming Sunday in Seattle, it is pretty unprecedented, but the Seattle Seahawks are currently favored by 20 points in Las Vegas.
It could be 20, 30, 40, 50. It doesn't matter. You know, I believe that Seattle, why are we even talking about this game? I mean, Seattle's going to win the game. So, I mean, it's a foregone thought. And so, you know, I think Seattle, you know, of course they're not going to be looking ahead, but, you know, it's probably going to be 30-6. That's my prediction.
You think you're going to see Tavares Jackson in this game?
You know,
actually playing.
Well, you know, if Seattle's lucky, they won't see Tavares Jackson. I'm one of the, you know, the believer in if you have your starting quarterback, just take care of your quarterback and not put him in that type of harm's way to where he's exposed to, you know, to getting hurt. But there's no need to put in. This isn't the college level where you're going to check and see what your second and third string looks like. I mean, it's, you know, these guys are good enough players, meaning the opposing teams that, you know, that play, they're good enough to keep the game competitive. And so I don't expect to see Tavares, but then, you know, who knows? You know, Pete might throw a wrinkle in there and want to see something. And, you know, hey, good for Tavares.
And you brought up RG3 in Washington earlier. And today in Mike Shanahan's press conference, he was asked if Kirk Cousins might get a chance to start. And Shanahan's response was laughter. And said, you know, if we didn't feel RG3 was the way to go, he wouldn't be in there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how the media wants to create and stir up things because that seems to be the thing to do. And thank goodness, Sean, you and I don't do that on this show. But since you've asked that, you know, mentioned this, I'm just going to state it that, you know, this is RG3's team. And, you know, let's not forget that he played zero in the preseason. So these first four games that RG3 is playing in are basically his preseason games. He's probably not going to be up to snuff till about week six or week seven. And, you know, for this notion that Mike Shanahan would put in Cousins, you know, is ridiculous. You know, RG3 is the franchise. And, you know, part of that is RG3 put this added pressure on himself by, you know, being boisterous in the offseason and stating that he's, you know, doing these miraculous things and putting the team on his back. But I believe that when RG3 is at 100% and when he's in sync with his receivers and he's doing, you know, those things that you saw him do being RG3, then, you know, the nation's capital team will be okay. But, you know, for the media to come out and stir this type of stuff up, and, you know, I mean, it is what it is, but, you know, I think it's ridiculous that, you know, we can't ask, you know, pertinent questions. And I don't think that that was, you know, the type of question that deserved, you know, a straight answer. And Shanahan was right to laugh at it. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, we, as in the Double S Express, can ask the right questions. We just need to have the proper media entity believe that and pay us to do so.
We're getting there, man. No doubt about it. I mean, we have enough listeners and we have enough people following our show. And, you know, I mean, we're getting, you know, the right people on and, you know, interviewing current players, former players, the whole nine. And so, yeah, we're on our way, man.
Sean Boyd, Raider Nation, the Oakland Raiders invade Denver, Monday Night Football next week during our next show, actually. How do you see that game going? Look into your crystal ball for next Monday night.
Well, as a fan, you know, of course, I would love for the Oakland Raiders to go in and hammer the Denver Broncos. As a realist, you know, of course, having Peyton Manning on the other side and his host of great athletes on the Denver Broncos, I see that that is definitely an uphill task. But as I've mentioned before, you know, on previous shows, the AFC West, when they play head to head, it's anybody's game. And since 2010, the head to head, the Broncos and the Raiders are 3-3. And so who would have thought that if you ask the average person, hey, what do you think since 2010, you know, what do you think the record is between the Denver Broncos and the Oakland Raiders? You'd get a ha, man, 6-0. They've probably been dominating the whole time. But I believe that if the Oakland Raiders can put together a solid game plan, Dennis Allen can put together a solid game plan, go into Mile High, and basically do what they did against Jacksonville, and that's create a strong running game, and that includes Terrell Pryor, that includes Marcel Reese, and that includes Run DMC, that will open up a lot of things for the Oakland Raiders. And so, you know, defensively, I believe that the Oakland Raiders are coming around. But, you know, if I were to make a prediction, I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm hoping that it's going to be a close game down the stretch. I'm hoping that Sebastian Janikowski ends the game with a game-winning field goal and you know, gets himself back into a consistent form because, let's face it, these first two games, he's looked a little sketchy between him and Marquette King, the Raiders' new punter who's now the holder. They have to get things right, but I would love for Oakland to go in there and squeak one out with a game-winning field goal.
How awesome would it be for the Raiders and Charles Woodson if he somehow was able to pick off an important pass from Peyton Manning that helps preserve an unimaginable victory in Denver for the Raiders?
Well, here's the biggest thing, you know, for the Oakland Raiders is you hear a lot of the negativity, and let's face it, you know, those on the outside looking in believe that Oakland should lose every game. But what we're seeing with these Raiders is you're seeing there's a team that is building a strong continuity, and it's not the Raiders of the past 8 years to where there's been disarray in the locker room. There's a strong cohesiveness. There's a strong love for the game, and they love donning that shield. And so, you know, it would be great for Charles Woodson to do something like that, because a lot of people believe that Charles Woodson is over the hill. There was a play yesterday to where Maurice Jones-Drew was trying to get into the end zone, turn the corner and get into the end zone, and Charles Woodson flies over, you know, very Polamalu-ish. You know how Polamalu jumps over the line and just annihilates the quarterback without anybody touching him? Well, Charles,
with all that hair?
Yeah. Well, Charles Woodson did that yesterday, and I believe that that was the actual play that hurt Maurice Jones-Drew. But you're talking about a guy that is so spry and has, you know, it not only is young at heart, but his muscles and everything. I mean, he's on all cylinders. And yeah, that would be great for Charles to do something like that, take it back to the house on a national stage and show the country and you know, let's face it, the world who watches Monday Night Football. Show everybody that Oakland Raiders aren't this doormat team anymore, and they're on the rise.
Well, it'll just be poetic justice, because it was Denver and Oakland that he was deciding between where to sign, and obviously on paper, the Broncos were projected to be the better team, yet the contract was a little nicer up front in Oakland, plus he'd played there, has a history there, and it would just be great poetic justice for one Charles Woodson.
Well, you know, on the other side, on the Denver defense, you have Champ Bailey as well. And so Champ's going to want to come out and play some, you know, some great defense as well. And so can you imagine if there a Champ Bailey and a Charles Woodson on the same team? My goodness, that would have been ridiculous. You talk about cornering the Super Bowl. That would have been great. But, you know, you have, you know, a great safety in Champ Bailey and a safety in Charles Woodson. You know, I think that, you know, that's one of the keys to look for, you know, in these matchups next Monday.
Definitely a big game next Monday, as every Monday on Monday Night Football. We'll keep you updated for sure next week, as we have done tonight. 17-10, Pittsburgh trails in Cincinnati. The Bengals on top. Sean Boyd, show number 19, just about in the books.
Yeah, man, it's, you know, again, you mentioned earlier about the season, football season being underway. I know we missed a lot of, you know, as far as talking about baseball, because of course we have October coming is around the corner, Sean, and you know that's an exciting time for Major League Baseball. Man, we might have to hit some of that on our next show.
Absolutely, October, like you mentioned, around the corner, and that is when baseball will be heating up. Of course, there are some pennant races going on. The Oakland A's looking to wrap up the AL West, and hopefully that will continue as they have, I believe, a six-game lead, but the Texas Rangers are not bowing out yet. Manager Ron Washington saying recently that they are not giving up on the division and they're going for it. So,
yeah, well, I mean, they lost today to Tampa Bay. The Texas Rangers did 6-2, and so, you know, it looks like that 6.5-game lead will stand for Oakland so far. And you know, for the Oakland A's, they're trailing the LA Angels right now 3-0, and that's in the bottom of the fourth. So unless those bats wake up, and the lead for the Oakland A's will remain at about six and a half games.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd in Sacramento, California, one half of the Double S Express. I am Sean Wally in Tri-Cities, Washington. This is On the Double with the Double S Express. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you to Davis Hsu at Davis Hsu Seattle on Twitter for being our big-time guest tonight. Look for him and his contributions at fieldgulls.com. And we'll be back next week with show number 20 right here on The Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.